us yet.
Okay, something needs to change. Sorry about that. Okay, do you see it now?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. All right. Sounds good.
Hey everybody, thank you so much for joining. We're just going to wait a few minutes for people to trickle in. So feel free to, drop a message on the chat, introduce yourself if you like to. And yeah, welcome. So folks, for those of you who have not donated to the Simid project, let you guys know that we at No Azure for Apartheid are matching donations. So now or after this call, if you want to donate to the Simid project, just send us evidence of your donation. And we, like as Microsoft workers and former workers, will match it. Maybe one of the moderators can drop the link for the Simid project. But yeah, we're also joined today by Rashid, who has a really exciting new game. If you are able to support his the game, it's really important. Maybe we can drop the link for that as well. We'll talk more about it in a couple of minutes. All right, so we're at the 5-minute mark, so maybe we can go ahead and start. Thank you, everybody, for joining. We're really excited to have this teach-in with you today. We'll start off quick with a quick round of introductions. My name is Nisreen. I am a former Microsoft worker. I was fired in August of 2025 when I took part in liberated zone encampments and protests at the Microsoft HQ. And I am a organizer with the No Azure for Apartheid campaign. Hassam, Kapib, or Patrick, or Rashid, do you want to go next?
Yeah, hi everyone. My name is Hussam. I'm Egyptian, born and raised, and also a former Microsoft worker. I was fired also in October of 2024 for my work with No Azure for Apartheid, and in particular for hosting a visual on Microsoft's campus. And yeah, excited to be talking to you about the campaign today. Patrick, do you want to go? You are muted, my friend.
Sorry about that. Thank you. Thank you. Hi, I'm Patrick. I'm an organizer with No Azure for Apartheid and a former Microsoft employee, and here to talk today about boycotts. And Rashid, would you like to introduce yourself?
Salam, everyone. This is Rashid Abaidi from Palestine. I'm talking to you from the West Bank, and yeah, I'm glad that I'm not a Microsoft employee and I was never fired from it.
I think we can get started. Can we go to the next slide? So last Friday marked the 78th anniversary of Al-Nakba, which translates to the catastrophe when Zionist militias mass murdered Palestinians, displaced over 750,000 Palestinians, destroyed over 500 Palestinian villages, which was done to establish the so-called State of Israel on Palestine's stolen land. Next slide, please. And it's really important that when we're commemorating the anniversary of Al-Nakba by honoring our martyrs, our losses, our wins, and our resistance, that we remember that this catastrophe has not ended. And a large part of why it has not ended is because of the complicity of global genocide profiteering actors and states. So while the so-called State of Israel was established in 1948, the plans for European colonization of Palestine through Zionism started well before that. Back in 1897, the first Zionist Congress was held in Switzerland, and it included over 200 delegates from different European countries. That Congress focused on establishing a Jewish state in Palestine and coordinating the settlement of Zionists to Palestine. And this was not the first example of Zionist settlement in Palestine, but it was one of the first examples of such a central and, frankly, efficient organization of Zionist colonial expansion. And then, following World War I, European colonial powers divided our region's land, and Palestine was occupied by the British. And as Zionists were settling in Palestine, the British were providing explicit and tacit support to their militias, even though they would sometimes clash with them. And they did this both before and after the British formally officiated their mandate of Palestine. And one example of that is the Balfour Declaration in 1917, which was essentially a document from the British government to Lord Rothschild, essentially giving the British government's backing to a Zionist state on the land of Palestine. In the photo on the top left, and in similar photos, you'll see that there is a special marking for what a lot of these organizations making these kinds of graphics referred to as the Israeli occupation, which they consider to be the West Bank and Gaza, which is in itself a form of colonial erasure. The land of Palestine extends from the river to the sea. The occupation did not start in 1967. The Nakba commemorates May 15th of 1948 specifically. And it's important to note that Palestinians have fought back and have resisted occupation with steadfastness, whether that occupation was British or Zionist or both or whatever throughout history. And here you can see just part of a poem written by Darin Tatur, who is a Palestinian poet. The full poem is longer than this. It's a really beautiful poem. Really encourage you to go read it. She was actually arrested and prosecuted for writing this poem. Next slide, please. When you see in the news that Israel is increasing its number of settlements in response to a Palestinian victory or a public show of solidarity with Palestinians, it's not new behavior. Israel maintains its settler colonialism through demographic engineering, whether that be by massacres or by forced displacement or by bringing in more and more Zionist settlers while denying Palestinian refugees their legal right to return. And they're able to accomplish that demographic engineering by maintaining apartheid, by committing genocide. And the point at the end of the day is to expand its occupation and its settler colonial goals. So last Friday was the 78th anniversary of al-Nakba, but it also marked the 952nd day of accelerated U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, which is now continuing under the guise of a fake, quote-unquote, ceasefire. And our need to fight back grows more urgent every day. It does not lessen with time. And just as the British, the Swiss, the U.S. offer their support to Zionists, there is an entire network of complicit genocide profiteering war criminals and who are making obscene profits from our oppression, particularly the military-industrial complex. And big tech now functions as an arms dealer and a surveillance manufacturer. And we need to consider big tech as an essential piece of the military-industrial complex. Microsoft is one of the biggest tech companies out there. Actually, it's one of the biggest companies out there at all. And Microsoft is embedded into every facet of the Israeli occupation of Palestine, which means that Microsoft is complicit in the ongoing Nakba. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Hussam to kind of explain how that is.
Yeah, so as we've talked a little bit about the bigger picture of the Nakba and the ongoing genocide in Gaza, let's talk about how Microsoft actually powers all of that over the past years and decades. So next slide. Microsoft has a footprint in all major military infrastructures in Israel. Microsoft technology powers the systems that terrorize, surveil, displace, and mass murder Palestinians from the river to the sea. And we'll talk a little bit specifically about how it does that. So if you go on the next slide. Here is just some of the ways in which Azure specifically powers different tools of surveillance for the Zionist regime, including the IOF reservist portal. So the reservists who serve in the Israeli military, the portal runs on Azure, including supplying cloud storage and AI services that are being used to store surveillance data on the Palestinians, to using AI to analyze surveillance data. Microsoft Azure also hosts the Palestinian Population Registry and the database called Rolling Stone, and the target bank of Palestinians to kill or different sites in Gaza. It also hosts the Al-Munasik app, which is used to sort of, again, surveil Palestinians and enforce the apartheid regime in the West Bank by, it's basically an app that any single Palestinian in the West Bank has to use to get permissions to enter and leave, like the West Bank, and it's run on Azure. And then lastly, it was revealed last year that Microsoft's storage was also used to store a million calls an hour. I've intercepted phone calls and texts from Palestinians all over the West Bank and Gaza. Basically, every single phone call that's being made by Palestinian was hosted on Microsoft servers, and then Azure's like AI was again used to analyze and using the information from those calls to justify targeting, kidnapping, murdering, and blackmailing Palestinians, including retroactively. There's a code that says like by an IOF is like Israeli military officer that whenever they needed an excuse to justify why someone was targeted, they would go back and look at this database. And it was revealed that those 11.5 petabytes of data were used in data centers in the Netherlands. And then Microsoft actually helped the Israeli military move them out of Europe to Israeli data centers before that data was transferred over to AWS. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. So, next slide. This is just some of the direct Israeli military collaboration with Microsoft Azure. So Microsoft sells again cloud AI storage compute services to directly to the Israeli military to power just some of those military units, including Mamram, which is the central computing unit in the Israeli military. It is most likely responsible for the automated targeting systems like the Gospel, Where's Daddy, Lavender, etc. It used to sell to Unit 8200. It recently stopped selling some of the services, but some other services are still being used, sold to the Unit 8200 and Unit 81, which are both intelligence units or surveillance units. It's also the Israeli Prime Minister's office, different Air Force, ground, military, air and naval units in the Israeli military. And all of these have been well documented by multiple investigative journalists and have even been bragged about by military officials themselves, including this person at an IT for IDF conference, which said that collaborating, as you can see here, like with Big Tech, Azure, Google, and Amazon, have allowed them very significant operational effectiveness in Gaza. Basically, they have helped automate and accelerate the genocide of Gaza, the world's first AI-assisted genocide. Next slide. In addition, Microsoft also partners and invests in the three major Israeli weapons companies, Rafael, Israeli Aerospace Industries, and Elbit Systems, all of which are customers of Azure, but then also Microsoft has invested in or acquired some of their subsidiaries or weapons partners. So Microsoft has deep investments and collaborations, not just with the Israeli military directly, but also with the Israeli military industrial complex. Next slide. We've seen how Microsoft in the past have actually been willing to at least pretend to adhere to their human rights statement and to their principles. They have divested from Russia after just weeks after the invasion of Ukraine. And in 1986, they also divested from South Africa in protest of apartheid. But of course, as we've seen many, many times again in this country and in the West as at large, Palestine is always the exception. However, this is where we come in to make sure that that is not the case and that we hold these companies accountable and force their hand essentially to end their partnerships with war criminals and genocide. Next slide. So this is where we come in. This is where No Azure for Apartheid comes in. So I'm going to talk a little bit about our campaign and how you can join. So next slide. I think there is no better way of doing that than just to recap how the last year went for the campaign. So if we can play that video, this is like our recap of 2025.
No Azure for Apartheid.
I'll tell you, I've covered Microsoft for more than 20 years. I have never seen anything like this.
This is the biggest labor story happening in the United States, in my opinion.
Here we go.
You are based on freedom of expression and speech.
Thank you for your protest. I hear you. I hear your protest.
Shame on you all. You're all hypocrites. that's when I was like, there must be other people beyond just this little bubble that I'm in that feel similarly as me.
حتى لو عربي أو مسلم شغال في شركة زي الشركة دي, أنت بقيت جزء من النظام اللي بيساهم في عملية الإبادة الجماعية.
Nadia, how about you show him how Microsoft is killing Palestinians? Jay, you are complicit in
a genocide in Gaza. Sarah Bird, you are whitewashing the crimes of Microsoft in Palestine.
Microsoft has banned the words Palestine, Gaza, and genocide in its internal email servers.
Tech workers have been waging an all-out grassroots revolt from within Microsoft, which is one of the biggest and most powerful companies in the world.
This is completely absurd. You continue to do business with Israel, continue to help genocide.
In defiance of the world that insists on dehumanizing Palestinians at every single turn, we are bringing the movement to the heart of this campus.
If we can get Microsoft to invest, this may be a domino effect in stopping private companies from carrying the genocide.
Our actions will continue as long as Microsoft is invested in the economy of occupation and genocide.
I never expected that my employer would have me dragged out of my own workplace for insisting that the mass murder of an entire people is wrong.
Sometimes the thing that's limiting us is our own imagination and our own limits on what we think we can achieve.
Today, protesters occupied the office of Brad Smith, Microsoft vice chairman and president.
But how could any person of conscience maintain business as usual when the business is genocide?
Brad Smith is the face of human rights at Microsoft. And yet Microsoft, every day, continues to abet this genocide.
So we are here at the doorstep of this executive building to deliver a message you cannot ignore.
I urge you not to let chains silence you, not borders restrain you.
To claw back a sense of normalcy, a sense of morality from these tech companies, and for it to come from one of the most valuable companies on earth, is vindicating to the organizing that we're doing and is a testament that we do not have to resign to the status quo. We do not have to resign to those people in power.
We do not want big tech blood money in Ireland anymore.
I made the decision to leave Microsoft because of its complicity in the genocide.
Hey, Johnson! The blood of the children of Gaza is on our hands, Johnson!
We will not rest until Microsoft permanently cuts ties with Israel.
Join the worker intifada!
You don't have to be public or, you know, go viral to make a change, you know, in Microsoft's complicity. That was only possible because many anonymous employees within No Azure for Apartheid, which is our campaign, also contributed behind the scenes.
Last year, we were here. This year, we'll be here. Next year, we'll be there every single day. No justice, no peace.
Thank you. So I think this is a good recap of what we've been able to do just over the course of 1 year last year. For context, we actually launched No Azure for Apartheid on Nakba Day in 2024. That was our official launch date. We started with our set of demands that you can see on the slide. IOF off Azure, disclose all ties. So IOF off Azure meaning like ending all the contracts and all the ways that Microsoft is supplying services directly to the Israeli military, the Israeli occupation forces. Number two is disclosing all the different ties that Microsoft has, not just to the Israeli military, but to the Israeli government and weapons manufacturers. As you can tell over the course of this presentation, we have been able to learn a lot more than we knew in the beginning because of the reporting that has been done, because of our organizing, because of some of the information that we've learned over the past year and a half. But there's still probably more that we still don't know of how deeply entrenched some of those contracts are. Number three was to call for an end to the genocide in Gaza and for a ceasefire. And number four is to end the discrimination against Arab, Muslim, and Palestinian employees and the unfair treatment for speaking up about Palestine. So within just 1 year of launching our petition, we had gathered over 2,000 signatures. We delivered the petition on Nakba Day last year. which forced Microsoft to come out with their statement that basically said that they've done an investigation and found no wrongdoing. And then, as you can tell, our protests only continued and escalated, ranging from not just petitions and online actions and internal employee activism on company platforms, but also taking to the streets, organizing protests, conference disruptions. And lastly, in summer of 2025, launching the Liberated Zone encampment on Microsoft's campus, as you can see in the picture here, and organizing a sit-in at Brad Smith's office, the president of Microsoft. 22 people were arrested over the course of those protests, and I believe 5 employees were fired in the process as well. But just 1 month after, in September last year, there was an unprecedented announcement from Brad Smith himself that Microsoft has become the first U.S. tech company to end some of the services, the AI services to Unit 8200 that allegedly were being used to power the surveillance platform that we talked about. And then since then, we've learned that a lot of that data has actually been transferred to Amazon, to AWS. But as has been noted before, these are just some services to just one unit in the Israeli military. Most of the other contracts with the Israeli military and all other military units remain. So this is why it is unprecedented, because it proves that direct action works. It proves that our organizing is successful. It is validating the year and a half of organizing and pressure that we've been able to do. But it just means that it motivates us to keep organizing and to keep pushing, because we are not going to rest until all of these demands are met. We believe that is the absolute bare minimum, because there is no reason that anybody should be doing business with a military that is committing a genocide, broadcast live on air, and using technology to accelerate that genocide. So next slide. So this is where we want everybody to join the campaign and be part of that movement. And to tell you a little bit more about where we stand and where we come from and the organizing principles at No Azure for Apartheid. At the end of the day, this is the most important piece to it, is that everything that we do must be grounded in ending the genocide and contributing to a free Palestine from the river to the sea. So next slide. These are some of just the our baselines for organizing as a campaign. We start from a position of solidarity with the Palestinian Liberation Movement and the understanding that Israel is a settler colonial apartheid state perpetuating a genocidal agenda. We end when Palestine is free, not when there's a ceasefire, because as we've seen, even a so-called ceasefire is just allowing Israel to continue committing the genocide, but in a perhaps slower and quieter pace. And not when even that there is some divestment, because again, as we've seen, it can be just a very small divestment. We build relationships and a network of solidarity and trust amongst workers and allies. We pressure the tech industry with worker power as well as public campaigns, and we escalate actions with respect and care for the risks involved. Next slide. So here's just a very broad overview of some of the ways that you can join No Azure for Apartheid and ways that you can contribute, ranging from working on our website to internal pressure, meaning just like pressuring the company from the inside, using town halls and petitions and stuff like that, doing research into Microsoft's complicity, ties with other ways of surveillance and oppression like ICE. We've launched the expose detailing Microsoft's relationship with ICE, for example, that's come out of that work stream. Or more recently for Palestinian Prisoners Day, we also launched a report on Microsoft ties with the Israeli prison service and the Israeli prison industrial complex. There is social media management, base building, and many other work streams that you can join. So this is just a big overview. And if you'd like to learn more and join the campaign, then please fill the form that Nisreen has put in the chat and we will be in touch and we can tell you more about these work streams. Next slide. So yeah, in the meantime, if you'd like to get involved, if you are a current or former Microsoft workers, please join the campaign at noazure4apartheid.com or noaa.cc/join. Microsoft's complicity is global. Microsoft is a global company. As you've seen, we try to also make our presence and our response and our organizing global as well. We have members ranging from the US to the Middle East to Europe, and we've had actions from Seattle to San Francisco to Ireland. And we want to target Microsoft's complicity wherever it is. So wherever you are, there's a place for you in the campaign. So please fill the form at noaa.cc/join. I'm going to then pass it on to Patrick to talk a little bit more about one of our work streams, which is the BDS work stream and boycotting Microsoft and finding alternatives. So.
Yes, thank you, Hassan. So I'm here to talk about boycotting Microsoft and other complicit companies. So we recently published a new part to the Azure for Apartheid website for boycotting Microsoft. You can find this at noaa.cc/boycott, or you can go to our website and go to take action and then boycott Microsoft. So what we have published is a list of 42 Microsoft products, as well as alternatives for all of those products. So these alternatives range from open source software to other paid software from non-complicit corporations. So this is live on our site as of this week. So you can go there and, you know, search for different software and find alternatives, you know, that are not contributing either to Microsoft's profits or its internal usage statistics for each of its products as well inside Windows. The other thing we have as well is hardware recommendations. So we have several sites that we link to for buying used tech hardware, whether that's cell phones or computers or gaming consoles like Xbox. And so this is a great way to, you know, not put money towards Microsoft to their hardware and to also reuse existing equipment as well. So the other part of this too is figuring out what other companies are complicit as well. So there are two existing apps which are built by Palestinians and Palestinian allies. So the first one I'm going to talk about is Boycat. This is a app, both an app and a website, where you can look up complicit companies and products. And there's also several other apps that they publish as well for identifying complicit companies. So this is a great resource. If you're considering buying products, you can go, you know, quickly look up, you know, whatever company, whether it's a tech company or any kind of company, and do that quick check. Another app I want to highlight here is called No Thanks. So this is a mobile app which you can use to scan product barcodes and figure out if specific products originated in Israel, because sometimes it's not always easy to tell. And so these are two awesome apps that you can use to find other complicit companies, and we highly recommend them to everyone. Okay, so with that, I'm going to hand it over to Rashid. He's the developer for Jeems on a Pillow, and he's here to talk about this game.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for the introduction. This is Rashid Abaid. I'm a game developer. I'm based in Palestine. Previously, I had a game called Layla and the Shadows of War, which is about the attacks on Gaza in 2014. That game was banned by the App Store, and it made like a backlash for them on social media, and they put it back again on the App Store. They claim at the beginning that it is political. But it was talking about a story of a family wanted to run away from the attacks, the brutal attacks on them. That game was downloaded 2 million times or more, and it made like significant impact in the industry. And we've seen a lot of players impacted by that game and sharing their experience. And the empathy that we've seen from that game. So from that game, like right now, we are working on a game called Dreams on a Pillow. And this game is talking about the Nakba. As Nasreen said, like the Nakba is almost like the root cause of what's happening today, because the global media and the mainstream media is talking about what's happening today because it is because of the 7th of October, and they forgot everything, or not forgot, they hide everything else before that. So we want to highlight that, and we want to talk about the root cause of what's happening and still happening in Palestine. Right now, I think we're living the same Nakba, even here in the West Bank, in a silent mode where no one else except the Palestinians who are living here are seeing it and seeing the impact of the daily activities that they are making through the settlers or through the army itself. So Dreams on a Pillow, going back to the game, is talking about the life of the Palestinians before the Nakba. Also to debunk the myth or the lie that they always used, which is land without people for a people without land. So we are highlighting two periods of time, which is before the Nakba and after the Nakba, and how the Nakba impacted the Palestinians and the physical displacement of them from their homes and the destruction of their villages. Also the psychological trauma that they suffered for generations through that event. Right now we're in the full production of this game. We finished the pre-production, and currently we are fundraising. We have a crowdfunding campaign on LaunchGood. You can check it out and have all the information about the game. And if you like that subject, I think it's very important to talk about this in this medium, because there are no other games talking about Palestine in games. And we know that games, it's a way to build culture, and it was used against us as Palestinians, as Muslims, as Arab. Whenever you play a war game, that you're always killing someone with a kufiyah or someone who's saying Allahu Akbar, which is used actually to build the stereotype against us, and to make us as the enemy and the target. So it's a powerful way to have an impact on the players, and we are using it to share the story of the Nakba among generations, among the young generation, and maybe the older generation who never heard about the Nakba, and the beauty of games that puts you as a player in the shoe of the hero, and you become the character that you are playing in, and that resonate more with you other than any other medium. That's it for Dreams on a Pillow. I think the other topic that I will say, like the organizers wanted me to talk about, which is boycotting Microsoft. I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I can't boycott Microsoft. It's a deeply rooted technology that I can't just leave it by my choice. Whenever I go out from my home, going anywhere, I'm passing a checkpoint, and there is a camera taking a picture of me and the car I'm in, and storing that information on a Microsoft server. Whenever I make a phone call with my parents or my wife or my children, that phone call is stored on a Microsoft server. Whenever I'm texting or even browsing on the internet, that thing is stored on a Microsoft server. And most likely, maybe this call is also stored there. And the evil thing that all of my information is analyzed and used against me to build a targeting system and against my people. So if you really want me to boycott Microsoft, it's not my decision. It's your choice. So take action.
Thank you, Rashid. We had a couple of questions for you during the presentation today. So we recently learned that you rejected a speaking engagement and funding at Microsoft. Can you talk about that and why you took that stance?
Of course, yeah. I don't want my name to be associated with Microsoft in any way. And I don't want to be a tool or a way to whitewash what Microsoft is doing here. So using all of these systems against me and in another way that they look like they are helping Palestinians, I don't want to give them that picture, first of all. As a stand also, it feels weird, like even to stand there while knowing all of that's happening to me because of them, because they are facilitating them. So it will feel like stupid just to go there and to take their money and to talk at their stage and to give them that picture. So yeah, this is why we refused.
Thank you very much. And then I guess second question I have for you today, can you also speak about current boycotts in the game industry and their role?
Yeah, I guess there is initiatives that the industry is trying to make, or some independence in the industry, like no games for genocide and stuff like that. And I think boycotting Xbox is very efficient and effective. And I think also many can do this without changing their lifestyle or changing something permanent in their life. And if you are used to Microsoft technology in your job and in different things, maybe you can have an excuse that you cannot switch technology, but switching your console and changing the games that you are playing, this is, I think it's simple. And I think just boycotting Xbox by itself as a player, it's one of the weakest points in Microsoft chain, to be honest. So if a lot of players actually target that point, that will have an impact. And we'll also, in the side of independent developers, we're seeing some studios are trying to boycott Microsoft. One of our friends, refused the funding. They get the funding from Xbox for their game, but they refused that funding and they returned it. So there is a change. It's going slowly, but since we are talking and since we are doing this, I think it will be amplified.
Okay, thank you very much. Really appreciate that. So we will open up the presentation for questions now. We should be allowing participants to come off mute. So I will go ahead and share our Q&A slide.
I know we had at least one question in the chat. Maybe Patrick, if you want to take that one. And other folks, feel free to drop questions. And once we answer that question, we've set it so that now you can unmute yourselves if you want to, if you prefer to come off mute.
Yeah, thanks, Nasreen. So I think there was a question in the chat. How can open source and machine learning be used to enable Palestinians to combat occupation? So I can talk about part of this. So I would say, at least in terms of open source software, if you're using open source software, then you're not using software that has the capability and potential to spy on you and to monitor resources on your machine. There are sometimes underhanded things that companies do, and having a device that is not phoning home to a company every so often, or not sending metadata to a company every so often, is going to be much more private for you and will enable you to, you know, not be able to, you will not have as much risk personally by using open source software. And if anyone else wants to take another part of this question, please feel free.
Sorry, guys, can you hear me? Yeah, basically, I'm the person who asked the question. I'm currently working as a system administrator, Linux system administrator. And I guess my question is also, if I could just make it more specific, as we all know, the machine learning is being used by some of the companies like Palantir and Anduril, and I guess the military complex in general. And if I understood correctly, they are using machine learning to recognize the faces and features of Palestinian people and then train their models using that data. So my question is, how can people contribute to open source to maybe build models that I guess Palestinian people could use and maybe have a better understanding of how machine learning is used in general so that they could probably use it for as a defense? Because in general, open source is being used as a weapon against the big guy, right? And I thought that maybe the same logic could be used with something like machine learning and drones in general in military industrial complex. Thank you, guys.
So to answer your question a bit, you know, personally, I don't really have any thoughts about how to use ML to help Palestinians. You know, I think that realistically, ML is used more is more suited for occupation and surveillance and control of people. So I would say that if there's anything we can do to fight back against that, it would be to do what we can to degrade or reduce the effectiveness of the systems that are being built for surveillance and control.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Time is it?
Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks, Tuzan. Yeah, I guess maybe we won't have the answers to all the difficult questions, but it's important to, you know, start these discussions and hopefully we can build off of them.
Yeah, I see there was also a question, another question in the chat about like, what are the obstacles to, you know, building alternative infrastructure to Microsoft? So I think there is a lot of things that can be said about that. But I think like some of the, like one of the moderators already said in the chat, ultimately, huge companies like Google, Microsoft, and Amazon, they basically function as monopolies because they operate at such a scale that is almost impossible to compete with or replicate. For example, like even with stuff like the huge AI capabilities that is being outsourced to the Israeli military, part of the reason why Israel is even resorting to companies like Microsoft, Google, and Amazon is because they have infrastructure and capabilities that are bigger than even the entire state of Israel is capable of doing. But what that doesn't mean is that it doesn't mean that, okay, we just give up and we throw hands in the air and say that we can't do anything about this. In my opinion, the way I think about this is how can we start small with stuff that is the most impactful and also easiest to give up? For example, it might not be immediately easy to stop using Windows or to stop using Office, for example, if that is like required for your job or something to use Outlook. Maybe it's harder to do that, but can we start with the easier and more impactful things? For example, the BDS website has like a list of what are the priority targets, including, for example, the gaming, like Microsoft Gaming in general, which includes Xbox. It's not just Xbox, but all the like the Xbox games, Xbox Store, the Game Pass, all of that. We can start from that. From there, we can start with boycotting or not buying Microsoft hardware, hard like devices, mice, laptops, headsets, whatever it is, or Copilot, and basically their AI. There is so much investment that Microsoft is doing into their AI infrastructure, and they really need their like Copilot to succeed. And they're shoving it into every subscription they can think of. Just cancel those subscriptions if you have them. If you have the Microsoft Office subscription and you can't just cancel it entirely, you can at least downgrade to a subscription that doesn't include Copilot. So there, you can start small. Oh. And I'll also give another example of if you're trying to boycott, for example, Google, it's also, again, feels ubiquitous. It feels almost impossible to just like stop using even Google Search or Google Chrome or Gmail or stuff like that. But again, you can start very small. You can start with switching to Firefox for your browser, or setting DuckDuckGo as your default search engine instead of Google Search, or switching to Proton for your email and Proton Docs and Proton Drive for storage instead of Google Drive and Google Docs. It doesn't have to be like an abrupt transition, but just starting small and like slowly transitioning over time all of that is still doing more to hurt their bottom line than just giving up because they're too big.
We also had another question to talk a bit about Project Nimbus. So Project Nimbus is a deal. It's a multi-billion dollar deal between Google and Amazon, as well as the Israeli government and military, and some of what the Israeli government and military called their like essential customers. So like the National Water Company and their weapon manufacturers like Elbit Systems, Rafael, these. Microsoft actually bid on the Project Nimbus contract, but lost out. So when the Israeli military or government or one of these customers wants to use cloud computing, they by default go to Amazon or Google. However, just because that's like what's laid out in the contract, that they by default do that, that doesn't mean that those are their only cloud providers. They also rely heavily on other cloud providers. So Microsoft is one of those many cloud providers. Just because it didn't win the Project Nimbus contract doesn't mean that Microsoft doesn't provide so much to the Israeli military. So if that sounds a bit confusing, let me try to simplify it a bit. The Israeli government, military, and other complicit Israeli companies, they usually go to Amazon and Google if they need cloud computing. But they also go to other companies, and that includes Microsoft. And for Microsoft, they rely on it a lot. So the Project Nimbus contract was finalized in 2021. And just a few months later, that deal for hosting the mass surveillance of Palestinian phone calls happened just a few months after Microsoft lost out on the Project Nimbus deal. So even though Microsoft isn't a part of it, they still give so much to the Israeli military and are still super complicit. But Project Nimbus is also very important when you remember that this stuff isn't just one complicit company, right? It's a network of complicit big tech companies that are, you know, empowering the military-industrial complex and the entire Israeli occupation. So when we talk about boycotting, yes, we need to boycott Microsoft, but we also need to look at Amazon and Google that are part of the Project Nimbus. I hope that answered it and didn't make it more confusing. I see a helpful link's been added to the chat. Not sure what was our next question. Maybe moderators can jump in here.
And I also maybe want to just add a little bit more context as well to the Project Nimbus. So there is a campaign, I'm sure you all have heard of it, called No Tech for Apartheid. And that started originally from Google and Amazon workers protesting Project Nimbus in 2021. And our campaign, No Agile for Apartheid, was born out of No Tech for Apartheid. So we started off as like kind of the Microsoft branch of No Tech for Apartheid, and until we launched officially with our name, No Agile for Apartheid, our petition, our demands, etc., in Nakba Day, May 15, 2024. So again, they're doing a lot of cool work protesting against Microsoft and protesting against Google and Amazon. So check them out as well.
It seems like there's no unanswered questions on the chat. If folks want to come off mute, if you prefer to ask your questions vocally, please feel free to do that.
Yes, my question to Rashid, I wanted to ask about education. Now that how much information is accessible from West Bank, because internet is a place where we learn a lot of stuff. And now that I know in Gaza, a lot of places, institutions and educational centers, everything has been unfortunately blown up. So my question is, do services like Khan Academy is accessible to people in Palestine? Because if it does, if it's not, then I think that's yet another obstacle for people in Palestine to empower themselves with the power of education. Thank you.
So when it comes to tech, usually Palestine is out of the map. So we're talking like about almost every financial system, everything that is actually could really make a difference in the economy or something like that is almost not working. When it comes to education, I think most of the open source information is available. And I think I'm not aware about the academy that you talked about, but I think many of these educational sources are available and accessible. But other services are almost forbidden for us. Like, this is why I was like saying, like, almost we are banned from everything, like from the banking system, from PayPal, from having an account on Kickstarter or Indiegogo or the App Store, where you actually sell your things and an independent economy. When it comes to tech, it's almost like you are unrecognized area, and no one target you or look at you as a potential customer or wants to provide a service for you. But I think the open source information are available for us to get.
Right, thanks.
So we have a question in the chat just kind of asking what an open source operating system is. Maybe it would be good for us to clarify that. Not everybody has a tech background. if anybody wants
sure,
to.
Sure, I can. Yeah, I can